Hello, it's Peter Wright and Kathleen Beauvais in Ontario, Canada, and surprisingly, a very misty or foggy Ontario, Canada. We can hardly see more than a few yards outside, but it's not cold, so we're not complaining too much for a Canadian winter. So this is another episode of the Yakking Show, and it's the show that provides you with a greater range of actionable business ideas than you'll find almost anywhere else on the internet. We always have interesting guests. Today is certainly no exception. But first, let me introduce co-host Kathleen Beauvais from Waterloo, Ontario. Hi, Kathleen. How are you today?
I'm doing great, Peter. Thank you so much. And happy new year to everyone. We so appreciate having you tune into our show, and we love reading your comments. So do please keep those coming. And if anybody is interested in being a guest on our show, we would invite you to come visit our website at theyakkingshow.com. Simply click on the Contacts tab. There's a short application form for you to fill out, and we would love to hear from you. And as Peter mentioned, we do have another special guest with us today. Her name is Samantha Burmeister. Hello, Samantha, coming to us from Napa Valley, California. How are you?
Yes, hello. Thank you so much for having me. And I'm so flattered that Peter said that he thinks that I'm interesting.
Now, Samantha, you are the founder of Nomad Copy Agency, and you are a creative wordsmith who helps put business thoughts and into highly effective sales copy. And I can't wait to delve into this topic because it's actually a very interesting one. But first, for our audience, can you please give us a little bit about your background and what led you to leave the corporate world and start the Nomad Copy Agency?
Absolutely. So, I would say it's a very common story in the entrepreneurial world, yet unique in its own way, that I reached a point in my corporate career where I had to make a decision to either climb through leadership or do what I said I was going to do, which was work really hard for myself rather than really, busting my butt every single day for somebody else's benefit. And I took that leap in 2019. Before that, I had a career in corporate sales. I was working for an IT research company, before that, an IT hardware company, and before that, a personal finance company. So, what I learned through those experiences, first of all, of course, all of the sales exposure and knowledge. The IT research company was, a lot of our analysts at that company did HR and sales research as well. So we were a very data-based sales organization. It was incredible. I got so much great experience and like database knowledge from that experience. But what I also learned on a more like fundamental level is how to make really complicated things easy enough to understand, first of all, but also so easy to understand that people understood exactly why they needed them. And that's hard to do with IT research and
It really
personal
is.
finance and stuff.
Really.
So I was really honing my skills in that way. I was writing a lot of emails anyway, but also during that time was pursuing my personal passion of traveling. My goal is to visit every country. And during my corporate career, I managed to visit almost 50 countries. I'm currently at
Wow.
just under 60, actually. I slowed down a lot in the last couple of years for obvious reasons. During that, so I was also running a travel blog as my personal passion. And with the combination of writing and at home, or on my side gig and selling as a career, when it came time for me to leave the corporate lifestyle behind, sales copywriting was a very natural step for me.
Wow. I see. I think we got a whole lot of interesting stories coming up here. So, but first, one for the benefit of our audience, small business owners, entrepreneurs, and managers in medium and larger sized business. In your experience, what's the biggest mistake most business owners and entrepreneurs make when they're creating their own sales copy?
They're telling them what they think that they want to hear and not what they need to hear. And there's two layers to that. One, they're not telling them in a way that they understand. And also, they're too deep in the weeds. So they're telling them all about features rather than benefits. And that just ends up being a whole lot of jargon that makes no sense and doesn't resonate with their audience.
And we see some glaring examples of that when we some of the emails and we get in advertising we're exposed to. Sure. Kathleen.
So with your Nomad Copy Agency, can you tell us a bit more about the services, the specific services that you offer?
Yeah, so I always like to start by saying there's a distinct difference between copy and content. And there's a bit of an overlap on a Venn diagram, but basically content is written for computers and copy is written for people. And the reason I say that is computers will crawl the internet for, and this is where SEO writing comes in, but that's where you're trying to rank for keywords. You're trying to get a computer to find you so that you get exposure to people. That typically looks like blog posts, podcast descriptions, captions on any social media. So that's written for computers. Copy is written to elicit a response from people. And that is websites, Facebook ads, landing pages, sales emails, etc. So that's what I do. I do the copy side of things. I elicit a response from people, and we say sales, but a sale could be any action. It could be click through to register for this free thing or download this thing. It's anything that elicits that actual response from someone, and that's what I write.
And of course, a typical response could be sign up for our newsletter or get on our mailing list, right?
Yeah, 100%. It's ultimately, and you know, this is where you get really deep in the weeds, and this is more strategy versus copy, but that's, you know, the whole value ladder of bringing people into your circle, and how many touches do you need, or how many exposures do you need to somebody before they take action? So that's where, you know, you go from Facebook ad to free thing, and then that free thing, there's copy on that page, and then the emails that follow that to lead you to the paid thing, and then there's that sales page. So there's a lot of copy that goes into it, and every business has and needs copy.
Yeah, of course, of course. Something that intrigued me when I was looking at your website was, let me go back a step, many copy creators, for want of a better term, writers sell their services to clients as either consultants or contract workers or whatever. You've taken it a step further. This is what I discovered on your website, and you've created templates. So for the same number of hours invested by yourself, you can satisfy an unlimited number of clients by providing them templates, which they can get from buy from your website. So that to me is a really smart way to expand your business. How did you come up with that idea?
It was the copy that I was writing over and over or that I was having sales calls for, but then people realized what the cost of having done for you copy was for those services. So it was a matter of necessity of, I love the people that I get to work with. And if it's, you know, I would do what I do for a whole lot less if I didn't need money to survive, right? So it met that need. It was something that people desperately needed, and a way that I could meet them where they were.
Excellent. So for our audience, while we're on the subject of your templates, just expand on that a little bit. Samantha, tell our audience the types of templates you offer if they go to your website.
Yeah, so most of them right now are email templates. And typically people will have a sequence. So one of the templates that I offer, and this is at nomadcopyagency.com/templates, which I'm sure will be in the show notes. But you need an opt-in sequence. So somebody downloads your freebie or attends your webinar or whatever that initial entry into your world is. And then there's all these follow-up emails. And if you don't follow up with them, you run the risk of sending a sales email later on and they say, who the heck is Peter Wright? And they delete it because you don't have any authority. You don't have any reason to sell to them. So an opt-in sequence helps to vaccinate against that issue by introducing who you are, what you do, why you are uniquely positioned to help them in their unique situation over the course of typically between 5 and 10 emails spread out over the course of several weeks. So that's one template. I do the same thing for Black Friday emails. I have templates for those to hype it up before, during, and post sale to keep them engaged. Same thing with flash sales, which are very similar to Black Friday sales, but people run them whenever they want. I also have abandoned cart emails. And if somebody has a very common free thing in people's to get people in and like build your know, like, and trust factor is a challenge, like a 5-day challenge, you know, drink your water for 5 days, change your habits, you know, whatever, especially at the beginning of the year, those are really popular. So
yeah.
I also have the free challenge email sequence available as well.
Well done. Sorry, Kathleen, I'm just going to add something there that I picked up on the website. I think on your website, you say that the abandoned cart email can achieve 40% conversion rate or something, which is sort of like the highest of any email. So that's really important for people that are selling online.
Yes. And that's relevant for people who are selling services and products. If you are capturing those people's emails and they're considering it, you know, you've got to catch them maybe an hour later when they're closer to their wallet or have had a minute to think about it. It's super important. And they are some of the highest opened emails, other than the initial email that you send them when they opt in for, you know, 10% off or whatever the free thing is that they're meaning to download. The second most opened email is an abandoned cart email. And people take action at a rate of about 40%, but a bounce rate on any given sales page is about 88%. So if 100 people visit your site, 12 will buy, and 87, 88 of them will not. And if you can send those 88 people a follow-up email to say, hey, don't forget to buy this thing, especially if there's some sort of, you know, extra discount or something attached to it, it will convert at about 40%. So then you're looking at doubling your sales that you would have made simply by sending a single email.
Closer to trebling on those statistics. So that's and again, it's an email that very few online marketers use. When I think of the number of sites I visit, think about buying, don't finish the process, but I don't get any further follow-up email. So yeah, very important. Sorry, Kathleen, I'm hogging Samantha's time here. Back to you.
Well, actually, I do have a question getting back to the templates in case our listeners are interested in maybe going and looking at them. So the templates is more like fill in the blanks about their particular product that they're trying to sell or service. And so how successful have these templates been for you? And please toot your own horn. This is great.
So I just released them back in October, actually. I was creating them throughout the year last year, again, based on what I was writing over and over or what people saw the value in having done, but couldn't quite justify the expense of having it done for them. And when I released them in October, they were very, very popular. There's something that, and this is just kind of a sneak peek into my business, I have to be launching, I have to be telling people about them because I don't run ads to them. I don't have traffic being directed towards them, but they've also been an excellent downsell. If I ever have a sales call where someone says, I just don't think that I can justify this right now, they're a great place for me to point people to and still be able to work with them and serve them and help them. Because like I said, if I didn't have to work for the money, I would do it for free because it's so valuable for people to be able to, you know, run a flash sale or, you know, double their sales with an abandoned cart email. And it's really nice to be able to not just say like, okay, sorry, bye. It's nice to say, you know, okay, that's fine. Not right now, but here's something for you.
Right. Sure. Right. Now you have some great testimonials from clients on your website. So can you tell us some of the highlights?
Yeah. You know, one thing I'm really proud of, I wrote some ads for a company last year that they received an 88% click-through rate on, which is like unheard of on ads. And I certainly don't say that to say this is typical. It was just incredible the way that between their ad strategy and how they did it, plus the copy that we had on that ad, that it was so successful for them. It was a list builder and they were building their email list by hundreds of people a day, which was awesome. And like I said, that's not common. That, you know, I've not replicated those results, but it was just like, wow, look at us go. Other things, I mean, a lot of people come to me after they have launched something. They know that their coaching program, for example, has been successful and they know that they could have done it better, but it's great. I love doing things for people after they've already done it themselves because they know that what they have is vetted. They know that it's an investment that's going to increase their profits rather than hopefully churn a profit. And that shift in mindset and that like very abundant, like confidence, first of all, allows me to write for them in a way that they already know exactly who it's for and how it's going to be delivered. They just need to say it in a way that resonates with more people and better so that they can raise their prices. So it's those situations where I get to look at data after a launch and say, okay, really the only changes you've made here have been, you know, maybe some small design changes. Your list has grown, but what really happened here is you changed your copy and converted at a 20, 30, 40% higher rate and at a price point that was, you know, 20, 30, 40% higher. So in 2022, I wrote copy for two people who through a couple different programs had million-dollar years. And I wrote copy for I'd have to look at the data. I think the fifth one, but definitely four, ended up being six-figure launches. And their previous launches were closer to the $30,000 launch. And these were over six figures. So it's fun. It's just so fun to be a part of the team and to help people shine in a way that they so deserve that they wouldn't be able to do on their own.
Oh, wow, that's really good. Excellent, excellent. So here's one for you that there's a huge interest in artificial intelligence writing right at the or creation, content, copy creation at the moment, especially with ChatGPT coming out just before Christmas and signing up 2 million people in 10 days or 2 weeks, including me, of course. And a lot of people are agonizing over their writers, creative content creators, creative people agonizing over their futures. And there's all sorts of articles being written about whether you should worry or shouldn't worry or whatever. So what are your thoughts? How do you think it's going to affect your business in particular and the creative writing in general?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it is fascinating. I personally haven't dug into it too much only for the sake of time. But from what I understand is that a few things here. So first of all, that there may end up being legal issues of like, where does this information come from? Like, how can you give adequate credit? Especially, I know there was an issue with, you know, that how it was really popular to put your face in and get all of the face, the art AI back about a month ago. An issue is that the AI was taught to learn from a handful of specific artists, and those artists aren't getting any credit for all of that work. And it's done very much in their distinct styles. So if we replicate that over to writing and other types of content creation, it's there may end up being real issues with that and where the machines are learning from. So there's that. On the other hand, I think AI, especially for content versus copy, is huge for beating what I call blank page syndrome of, okay, I need to sit down and write a blog post about XYZ. And it helps to get you past that hump. However, it still doesn't sound natural to me. And as far as the psychology behind copywriting and headings, especially because copy often is very grammatically incorrect and on purpose, or it's clever on purpose. And those nuances for copywriting specifically, I think it's going to be really hard for AI to get there. But again, if you need it to help you generate some ideas and then work from there, I don't see anything wrong with it. I also don't feel threatened by it at this point.
I just want to jump in here because Peter gave it a trial run and he showed me the blog post that was generated partly by him and partly by this AI generated platform. And you're absolutely right in that what Peter wrote really was copy, and in his tone, you could tell it was from him. And then, of course, the one that was generated by AI was very just facts. And it was, you know, it was a completely different tone. It was just matter of fact. And that was my impression anyway. So, I don't know if AI could get personal that way.
Yeah, I've watched a few demos where it's also like, okay, if you go in and change that paragraph because you don't like it, it'll automatically change what comes after it to start to mirror that. And I think it's fascinating. And I love that that tool's available. I don't know, possibly even a meme that I saw, you know, so the face ones that they were doing, some of the people had like six fingers. And that's a great way to describe the way that the written AI is you have to watch out to make sure that it doesn't It's not a mutant version of what you want to write. Another thing to consider too is time. So if you're going to put just as much time going in and editing what the AI said, why don't you just do it yourself if it's taking almost as much time as doing it yourself, and know that you're alleviating any sort of legal issues. That said, big fan of staying ahead of technology. I think everyone should go experiment with it and play with it, because it's not going away. It's just a matter of, is it going to replace me? Not yet. And I don't see it on the horizon too soon.
Right.
A number of the people who are much smarter than me that I follow in the marketing world feel, and the writing world, that it will very quickly affect some of the people who sell their services on Fiverr, for instance, the low end of the market, right? People who are churning out content as opposed to copy to fill spaces on websites and in emails. It could quickly do away with some of their work. But it's going to be, I think, as you said, a long time before it can replace people who put a lot of thought and who are experts at what they're doing. So going back to the post that I did that Kathleen was talking about, I deliberately wanted to put a piece generated by AI in there, because that was part of the topic of the post. And I gave it a prompt. It gave me a very factual 600. I asked for 1,000 words. It gave me 670, but I could have told it to go on, and I didn't. I didn't tell it what style. So it was very textbookish and formal, but it was factual. It was accurate, and it served its purpose. But I put a disclaimer at the top of the page that the post was partly created by AI. I would never attempt to put an AI generated post out and claim it as my own writing, because anyone, even a reasonably astute reader, will know straight away it's not. So I think there's a little danger for some people, but I think, as you said, it's a good tool. And all these tools, from the calculator to the personal computer to a whole lot of other stuff that people thought would be the end of huge job sectors, you know, we've got used to them and started using them, and people still do maths, even though they now use a calculator. Well, use a computer now. So yeah, it's part of technological advancement, I think. Yeah.
I'll be very curious, especially if you continue to do that, to see when I say to continue to do that, I mean, post blogs that are partially written by AI. I will be very curious to see how SEO is affected, if it's positively or negatively affected, if Google knows that it was computer generated. And again, if there ends up being laws put into place that say, like, you must put the disclaimer that it was partially written by AI, because even though it's not a person's intellectual property, it's a computer's intellectual property, you know, it'll be super interesting to see how that goes. And
it's already been announced by your government. The American government has, I'm not sure which department it would be, but there was a public statement right at the end of the year, I think, that AI-generated content cannot be copyrighted. There's no copyright on AI. But the point you made earlier, the original creator of the original material that was used to generate the content could have a claim. So, yeah, interesting one. Wow. Back to you, Kathleen.
Can you tell us about the latest trends in, other than AI that we've just been talking about, the latest trends in creating copy for websites?
Yeah, so the big, like, overall style is very minimalist, and we've seen this throughout the last several years. I mean, if look at, for example, Google's homepage, there's not copy. It's a single call to action of search, right? And we're seeing that reflected, and you can almost tell when you look at someone's website and say, either this has been here for 10 years or this person is simply not following trends. An example of that would be if you picture a auto sales company, like your local Ford dealer, picture their website. There's a million pictures, there's a million calls to action, et cetera, versus you look at Tesla. It's very simple website in comparison. So that's what we're seeing across the board, especially from service providers, is that there's a single call to action above the fold, and above the fold is, it harkens to a newspaper. So people would purchase the newspaper based on what's above the fold on the front page. And then we use that in web as well. I'm sure you two know this, but in case the audience needed a refresher. So the above the fold is what happens when you pull up a website, what happens on the first screen before you scroll. Single call to action. It also needs to be, we're leaning for clarity over creativity. And by that, you know, we've all been on that website and we've landed there and say, but what do they do? And, you know, this isn't the time and place to make everything rhyme and alliteration and cutesy and have a little dinosaur running across the screen. It's the clarity over creativity, especially we want our copy to have personality throughout, but in that header, in that initial above the fold area, we need clarity over creativity. And that's where we're seeing a lot of very simple fonts. This is more of design, but it's relevant because it's copy as well, as the real scripty fancy fonts are going by the wayside as well, again, for readability. And also it's a lot tougher for a computer to crawl an image if there's font on an image versus font that's just in the website, it's tough. A computer won't be able to read the heavily scripted fonts. So very sans serif fonts. Mm-hmm. So nothing with like the tails on them, no scripts in the words. And again, brevity and clarity is where everybody's headed right now.
Right.
Interesting. Yeah, I've certainly seen that trend. Yeah. And been a bit guilty of not updating my personal blog website for a while. So I need to do some pruning there as well, I think. Very, very good advice for people. Very good advice. Mm-hmm. So here's a question for you. Sorry, sure. Kathleen, did you want to ask?
That's all right. Go ahead.
Here's one for you. You've had a lot of experience in the corporate world with your clients traveling, living in the wine area, all this sort of thing. In your mind, is there one habit or characteristic or mindset that sets successful people? I don't just mean making lots of money. I mean, people who have a good balanced life that call them successful, apart from the average who never really make it. Is there one thing or is it more complicated?
What stands out most to me is people's positivity.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to bring it to copy, for example, is if you're ever on a website, you'll notice when somebody has done a lot of work on understanding their ideal client and all of their pain points, but doesn't actually speak to any of their solutions or pleasure points. And again, this is translatable for both just a general mindset as well as for copy. But, you know, so you'll go onto a website and you'll see, are you tired in the morning and your feet always hurt and your kids wish they could play with you, but you won't play with them. And, you know, they just list all of these like awful things. And it's like, well, yeah, but take me to the next level. Tell me how to overcome this adversity. Tell me how you are uniquely positioned to help me, you know, so say, are you ready to wake up refreshed, excited to spend time with your kids because you feel great? Those are the pleasure points. And those are the people that everyone is just more attracted to. Both out in the world, like I think that's the biggest difference, is that mindset of success is that there's a solution always rather than a problem. Yeah. Always.
Absolutely.
Very good. Excellent. Thank you for that.
We're getting short on time. So how do people contact you, Samantha? Now you work with people from all over the world as well, right?
I do. Yep. That's why I called my company Nomad Copy Agency, because I am everywhere and I'm online. So I do. I worked in the past year with people from South Africa and England. And I love working with people who are really great at English, but it's not their first language, because that's often where, you know, it could sometimes sound robotic. If you learn English in school, your copy doesn't sound, you know, it sounds a little bit AI-y sometimes. But yeah, people can find me online. I'm at nomadcopyagency.com. I am on LinkedIn. My name's Samantha Burmeister. And I do spend a lot of time on Instagram at nomad.copy.
Okay.
Very good. Excellent. Well, we will put that on. And for audio listeners, all of those contact details will be in the description. You can find it there and on the yakkingshow.com website once the episode is published. So thank you, Samantha.
Well, Samantha, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. Thank you so much for being with us today. And once again, thank you all for tuning into our show. And until next time, take care, everyone. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.